Okay. Say when, Michael. You can all hear me now again? Okay, we're back from our break. What we're going to do then is move on. Now, Ms. Summer, how I intended to proceed on this next panel was essentially under the umbrella of cumulative impacts, because the way it was couched in the pre-hearing conference statement from Ms. Lamb and Mr. Deaver, I gathered that all of these areas were under she wanted to inquire into cumulative impacts for all of the areas that we had on the list, which is no longer up. Well, there it is. Good. Below that. Okay, so bio, traffic, soil and water, and noise. And so since all of staff's witnesses are on the telephone, right, we don't have any of these people here in the room today.
Correct.
Okay, so they're all on the phone. The way I would like to proceed is you have questions with regard to cumulative, because these witnesses are available at the request of the trust. So you can ask your questions, and really, we'll give you some latitude here in terms of, if you have a bunch of bio questions that are distinct from traffic and transportation, then however you want to organize it is fine.
Yeah, I think my questions are not so much organized by topic. I did mostly have questions on the demolition, since that was how it was set out. And I think I probably just kind of posed them to the group, if that works for...
And that's exactly what an informal panel is supposed to do, is be able to, the knowledgeable person speaks up and answers your question. So, the first thing I'm going to ask is, on the telephone, do I have Scott White Scott White, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Jennifer Lancaster, are you there?
I don't think Jennifer will be here.
Okay, so Scott White, you're the witness for biology today, right?
Correct.
Okay, and Lisa Fuwal?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, for traffic, and then Abul-Karim Abulaban?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, for soil and water?
On the phone.
Thank you. And Joseph Hughes or Shahab Kashmash Rab?
Yes, sir, Joseph Hughes is here.
Shahab Kashmash Rab.
Okay, great. So all of those witnesses are available, and the area that we're inquiring into now is the cumulative analysis of the demolition of the Alamitos Generating Stations units 1 through 6.
Units where the man?
Yes.
Mr. Shelley, just like get my mic to work. Thank you. We also have one biological witness who hasn't been sworn yet. So to Melissa Fowler, she provided our testimony. No one asked to cross her, but we want her to be available since this informal process is mysterious a little bit. So we'd like her to be sworn as well.
Okay. And so with that, Ms. Fowler, I'm going to ask you to stand, raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of California?
I do.
Thank you. Please be seated. And then I'm going to ask Scott White, Lisa Wural, Abul-Karim Abulaban, and Joseph Hughes, and Shahab Kashmash Rab to please stand. Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of California? And I need my list back up on the, if I could. Mr. White?
Yes, I do.
Ms. Worrell?
Yes, I do.
Mr. Abulaban?
I do.
Mr. Hughes?
I do.
Mr. Kashmash Rab?
I do.
And there's, Mr. Powers, you're not testifying with regard to any of these areas, correct?
No.
Okay. So with that, you're all under oath, and the questioning is with Ms. Summer.
I just want to start off by inquiring if staff will be providing further analysis on cumulative impacts after the air quality analysis is complete.
Anyone?
Transportation won't be.
Biology, we don't expect to.
Soil and water, we don't expect to find any additional testimony.
Nothing additional for noise and vibration.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm getting an indication from the court reporter. Okay. So, for the people who are on the telephone, we need you to identify yourself before you speak. So, Mr. White, you'd say, this is Scott White, and then answer the question, if you would, please. Remember to do that after each, as soon as you're going to answer any question. Thank you. Can you hear them okay? Okay. Good. Go ahead, Ms. Summer.
Before you go, if I could have my mic. Thank you. I just want to clarify, they're not precluded from final addition of testimony if they feel it necessary. Is that correct?
Well,
they said they don't anticipate at this time filing additional testimony. I don't want to leave any ambiguity about their ability to respond with testimony if they feel they need it.
Well, that's an important question because my intention was to close the record today at the close of all of the evidence for all of the matters that don't have to be open for the Part 2 evidentiary hearing. So, unless they're going to give further testimony, which nobody has indicated that they're going to, I think that what we have in the record is what they're going to give us.
That's fine. It, obviously, a party could bring a motion if they felt compelled to do so, but thank you.
Yes.
It's the intention to close the record on all other issues at this time. The trust would object for the reasons laid out in many different briefs that all of these other areas are impacted by air quality, and that there may be some additional evidence that the trust wants to put forth once we have a better idea of what the air quality, final air quality analysis says.
Right. And so what I would say is this. Your objection is noted. We told Ms. Lamb and Mr. Giever that what we would do is we would close the record without precluding the trust from making a motion to reopen upon a showing that some area that we've already covered that we would have declared as closed is impacted in some way by air quality. So, for instance, the one that comes easiest to my mind would be if in biology, if there were an issue on nitrogen deposition. Well, clearly that's an air quality issue. So that would be, I think, a good example of where we would allow the trust to open that up and inquire.
I appreciate that. I do think it does put somewhat of an unfair burden on an intervener, but at least there will be an opportunity since this is the perfect example, nitrogen deposition on a wetland impact on invasive species.
But a lot of those, one thing to point out is the air quality information in the section is going to be the air quality about the AAC project. And so if the thought is that there's going to be some additional air quality of AGS, that's the direct impact on part of our analysis.
Understood. So with that, I'm going to ask again, Ms. Summers, you have questions for these witnesses, and remember, witnesses, to identify yourself when you respond.
So in the FSA Exhibit 2000, page 4.6-22, staff writes, because all construction / demolition and concurrent operation would occur within the same project boundary, the cumulative impacts from both projects are expected to be similar and therefore less than significant as determined by the staff assessment. Is it staff's testimony that the impacts of construction and demolition are the same? And if so, explain how that can be so.
I'm sorry. This is Joseph Hughes.
1 minute, Mr. Hughes. Hang on.
Yeah, as a matter, I'd like to ask that Mr. Babula's mic and mine stay hot so that we can object as necessary. And I'm sorry if that's an annoyance to the sound folks, but all I was asking for is a restatement of the reference. You said page 4.
4.6-22.
Okay. And what section is that in, do you see?
I don't know what section. I'm not sure what section that is.
4.6. Noise and vibration. Thank you. Go ahead. So, Joseph Hughes?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Could I just ask that she repeat the question one more time now that we've had some delay?
My question. in the FSA, staff writes, because all construction / demolition and concurrent operation would occur within the same project boundary, cumulative impacts from both projects are expected to be similar and therefore less than significant as determined by staff assessment. Staff's testimony, therefore, that the impacts of construction and demolition are the same, and if so, explain how that can be.
Okay, so this is Joseph Hughes. In evaluating the impacts from construction and demolition for this project, EPA has set forth guidance for various construction phases, whether that be concrete pouring, steel erection, mechanical work, cleanup work, and one of the phases include demolition, site clearing, and excavation. And that guidance explains the types of equipment that would be used and the expected noise levels at various distances. We evaluated the construction noise impacts from this project using the highest of those activities and assume that they occur throughout the entire construction schedule. It just so happens that demolition, site clearing, and excavation were one of the higher noise-producing construction phases. And when evaluating construction impacts, that was interchangeable between demolition and construction. So yes, both we evaluated the assessment that the construction impacts would be, let me find the table, I think it was 71 dBA at 375 feet or something. Sorry, I'm scrolling through the table. Yeah, so table 5, it says daytime construction / demolition noise, and then the first footnote is A, that those impacts are estimated to be 71 dBA at 375 feet, and that's consistent with the EPA guidance documents. They provide the sound levels at 50 feet, which would be about 91 dBA. But yeah, so when we evaluated those impacts for the cumulative assessment, we said that they would be similar between the two because while one would be operational and the other would be under construction or demolition, conversely, that would be very similar if the other one was then being demolished while the respective one was under operation. So yes, we did assume that construction noise and demolition noise were the same for purposes of this assessment.
Rebuttal, so they would use the same equipment.
I.
Let's turn to the FSA, page 4.247. Staff states the FSA has been revised to indicate the AGS decommissioning and demolition schedule are unknown. Therefore, staff is not aware if there may be some overlap between these activities. Status of the project is listed as unknown in the FSA, and staff has otherwise indicated that decommissioning of AGS is somehow unknown, stating in the rebuttal testimony, which is Exhibit 2004 at page 6, details of any future demolition of the facility are currently unknown. But the proposed air permit goes into some detail about the timing as well as the MOU. And I'm curious why staff did not take into account the details that are set out in the air permit or otherwise make an effort to attain information necessary to analyze the impacts of the demolition.
I want to object to the phrasing of the question, that you could restate it more objectively without failure to do something. That would help me understand the question.
So your objection is conclusory?
Vague and conclusory, yes.
Well, I also stand the objections. Basically, Ms. Summer, we really want it. Your question is, did any of these witnesses calculate or take into consideration the air quality? I forgot how you asked.
The details that are presented in the PDOC regarding the decommissioning and the scheduling.
May I suggest that if you can see the list of your witnesses, you might just want to ask each witness whether they took that into consideration.
I would go through each witness. If you did take into consideration the information that's presented in the PDOC from the Air District.
Mr. White?
Yes, Scott White. I'm the author of the biology section, and I think that's the section that's been quoted from. And no, I didn't take that into account.
Thank you. Ms. Worrell?
Yes, with respect to traffic and transportation, I did not take in that information.
Mr. Abulaban?
For soil and water also, we did not take that information into consideration because it's not relevant.
Or Mr. Hughes?
No, we didn't specifically use the information provided in the PDOC. However, that being said, we may have made similar assumptions to some of the information provided, but I can't attest to that. We made our assumptions for our analysis, and we can stand behind those.
If I could, I don't want these to get away from us. I'd like to ask whether those witnesses are aware of any lures to traffic witnesses being asked an air quality question. Is a traffic witness
That's
aware of any
question.
Question, any lures that would require them to take into consideration the PDOC in their analysis?
That's a great question, Ned. I'm just going to ask you to hold on to until we work around to the applicant. Go ahead, Ms. Summer. The question's with you.
Just a moment. I apologize. I'm looking for an explanation. There's two statements in the FSA, this would be regarding biological resources. So the FSA says Exhibit 2000 at page 3-2. It's expected that operations at AEC will be occurring during any demolition of AGS. Concurrent construction at AES with demolition at AGS is not expected to occur. So if demolition and operation will be occurring at the same time, please explain further explain your statement that the combined effects on biological resources from the construction and operation of AEC with other expected projects in the area described above would not be cumulatively significant because of the dispersed nature of the projects in location in time. That's at page FSA page 4.2-48.
That was bio.
I just have a little unclear. Did you say that there's going to be construction at the same time of demolition, or are you posing that as a hypothetical? Because that's not in that. There's no evidence that that's going to happen.
I'm reading quotes from the FSA.
Right. So, and you're reading from the bio section.
Yeah, I believe so. This is discussing the combined effects on biological resources.
Mr. White, can you respond?
Sure. Scott White, author of the biology section. The operational effects that could affect biological resources are essentially the noise of the operation, when the plant goes online. It's pretty far removed from the wetlands. We relied on the noise team to do modeling of how loud noise would be off-site at that distance, the nearest corner to the wetlands. It would be less than significant. The combined effects of other noise in the area, whether it's traffic noise or whether it's the AGS demolition or other effects, these things are generally closer to the wetlands. The question is, from a cumulative impacts question, would the project's operation plus these other things combine to make a significant impact to wildlife at the wetlands? And possibly they would. Possibly all the noise of the area combined would do that. And if so, would the project itself, would the operation of the AEC have a considerable contribution to that cumulative effect? And the answer is no. It has only a small amount of noise during operation that would not considerably contribute to any off-site cumulative effect.
Can you further explain what you mean, though, when you state that it will not be cumulatively significant because of the dispersed nature of the projects in location and time?
other activities that make noise are physically dispersed and dispersed in time. So as traffic is kind of throughout the general area, other construction projects, other demolition projects, other noisy activities, whether it's fire engine sirens or anything else, they're scattered around physically in the region, and they don't occur all at once. They're scattered around in time.
So is that statement not supposed to refer to the demolition of AGS, which will be going on at the same time that AES is operating?
Objection. I'd like her to restate the question. I think she may be mixing two different types of activities together. I don't know if you're focused on the cumulative effects of the demolition of AGS.
I
would overrule the objection. I think it's clear that she's talking about the impacts of noise with regard to demolition along with the operational noise of AEC, if I understand your... I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Ms. Simon, but that was the way I read your question. So, I'm sorry, at this point, would you ask the question again? But I would overrule the objection.
I'm looking for some clarification on your statement regarding there not being a cumulative impact because of the dispersed nature of the project and location and time. Is that supposed to or not supposed to refer to the demolition at the same time that construction or operation of AEC is occurring?
The phrase dispersed in, I'm sorry, I don't have that page open in front of me, but the phrase regarding to dispersal, either physically around the neighborhood or in time, doesn't refer to any one thing, but to all the contributing activities. As far as demolition of the AGS, that would occur obviously at the site where the AGS is located. It wouldn't be dispersed throughout the area. But other things are dispersed. I hope I'm making myself clear.
Yes, I think so. Thank you. Let's see. This is a question regarding. I'm not quite sure who this would be for, but it. It was in the rebuttal testimony. I'll just give it to the panel. The appropriate person can hopefully answer. So the statement in rebuttal testimony, which is Exhibit 2004, page 7, is the operation of AEC are not expected to release dust and debris, and therefore there's nothing to combine with the temporary AGS demolition dust. The general understanding of dust would be its particulate matter. So is the staff testimony that AEC will not be releasing particulate matter that could be cumulative with the dust or particulate matter that's coming off of the demolition?
This is Scott White again. I think that's in the biology section. And again, from the question of biological resources, whether or not there's a significant impact to wildlife as a result of dust originating from the project. Our primary concern was during construction, and there are various dust control methods during construction that would keep dust from dispersing not only through the neighborhood but a distance away to the nearby wetlands. Would that dust possibly cause a significant adverse effect to wildlife in the wetlands? We wouldn't expect so, and certainly with dust control measures during construction, if there was any impact at all, it would be less than significant. During operation, I can't testify as to whether there would be any particulate matter emitted from the plant. I think that would be for the air quality staff in part two of these hearings. But as far as any cumulative effect of demolition of the existing AGS, along with operation of the AEC, and insofar as how that cumulatively might affect wildlife in the wetlands, I have the same answer that I did a minute ago. The combined effects of the two may or may not be significant, but if they are significant, the contribution of the operating AEC to such an impact would not be considerable.
So just to clarify, So when you were talking about dust, does that, or would that not include particulate matter?
I can't testify to that.
I want to try to clarify. I'm not sure the best way to do this, but...
Wait a second. You're not a witness, and you're not
right.
You have an objection.
Right. It's an objection if she can clarify whether that dust was hypothetical from the video showing implosion as being the basis of saying, if that's what happens, here's our rebuttal response to your filing testimony.
I move to strike that. I think that the question was clear. You can object because you want a clarifying answer from your witness with regard to whether there was PM10s or not. He just testified that he couldn't speak to that.
Well, what I was looking for is a clarifying in the question about what she's referring to in dust.
She's reading a quote from the rebuttal testimony. So the words, the dust came from the, presumably Mr. White or someone from staff. Don't let me put words in your mouth, Ms. Summer.
I'm satisfied with the answer.
Okay. So, as I come around, I'm going to give staff an opportunity to speak to their own witnesses and clarify as needed, so keep notes. Okay, but I really want to keep the flow going. I'm just going to go party by party, and then we'll come back to the land trust on that. So, overrule on the objection. Go ahead, Ms. Summer.
I wonder if I could expand just a bit. As far as we look at dust as its potential adverse effects to biological resources, wildlife habitat, really the main issue is what we are aware of, where a lot of dust, like from a dirt road, a construction site, on vegetation immediately adjacent to the site, or even on rare plants, dust can cover up the plants and prevent them from photosynthesizing. And in this case, I'm thinking of a much more vernacular term, dust, like what we see coming up from a dirt road as a truck goes by. Those are the kinds of effects, whether cumulative or the simple effects of the project itself, that we're thinking about when we talk about dust as an effect on biological resources. I'm not aware of any published research on PM10s might affect plant photosynthesis. And so the dust is much more vernacular.
Okay, here we go.
Oh boy. Well, our people are trying to isolate where the extra noise is coming from. Questioning still with you, Ms. Summer.
I apologize. This is Scott White again. Were you able to hear my reply a minute ago?
Yes, we were able to hear you, but right now I have a quick housekeeping. What's my name?
Sure.
Is Mr. Edwards here on the phone? Can you speak up if you're on the phone, Mr. Edwards?
Oh, great. They want me to talk now.
Okay. All right. We're going to go. Actually, I would rather stay on the record if we can. If it's going to be quick, did we lose?
No, that's different.
Okay, while you're doing that, I can continue to take testimony, right? Okay, thank you. So we're still on the record, Miss. And from time to time, ladies and gentlemen, it's 2016 and we are relying on electronics and people testifying from Sacramento on the telephone, and we're at the mercy of many, many, many technical potential issues that can arise. So from time to time, things like this will happen. We need to interrupt the proceedings to get clear on how to make the phones work better, et cetera. And we apologize for those sorts of inconveniences. They happen. Apologies to the parties. So, Ms. Summer, go ahead.
Has staff analyzed human health impacts of demolition? Question for the panel.
Say again.
Has there been any staff analysis of human health impacts of demolition?
Human health, would that be public health? Yeah, I think we have public health and air quality. We, for the part two, is going to be air quality, which includes greenhouse gases and public health. So the FSA part one included everything except air quality and public health.
Okay. Okay, I will table questions on those matters for now, then. Has staff analyzed the cumulative impacts of the battery energy storage system project?
That's one that I think you better go witness by witness on.
If staff, you could go through, if you could please indicate if there's any staff analysis on the, I think they call it the BESS battery energy storage system project.
So the question is whether there's any analysis on the battery, on the BESS, B-E-S-S. So I'm just going to ask each witness, and you can respond, Mr. White.
Sure, this is Scott White and with Biology. No specific analysis of that energy, of that battery storage system. Again, the types of effects that we were looking at were off-site effects to the wildlife habitat and the wetlands. And in general, we looked at cumulative effects of the project with other types of construction and other activities in the area without specifically looking at that one.
Ms. Worrell, same question?
Yes. Staff, Lisa Worrell. By the way, I want to clarify the spelling of my last name. It's W-O-R-R-A-L-L, so there's two L's at the end. Staff included the battery energy storage system project in traffic and transportation table 11 beginning on page 4.10-27, and it's part of the cumulative impact analysis for traffic, and so that has been included with respect to traffic generation and impacts to traffic.
Mr. Abulaban, same question.
No, Soil and Water did not, consider any specific impacts, from the BESS project. But the assumption that we always, that Soil and Water staff always works under, is that any project will work, will be under certain Clean Water Act, permits that will manage any impact from that project on water quality from that project. So the cumulative impact would be, since both projects would be under the pertinent permits, then the cumulative impact would still be compliance with those permits and no impact.
Mr. Hughes.
This is Joseph Hughes. We acknowledged and included a brief discussion of the AES battery energy storage as part of the cumulative impact assessment on page 4.6-23. However, at the time, it was noted that when we were doing our evaluation, it was just a conceptual site plan that was submitted to the City of Long Beach, and it was proposed. It was still in the entitlement process. There wasn't, it hadn't yet entered the EIR phase. So we were informed that the city expected to consider AEC together with the battery energy storage at the time that it entered the EIR phase. We weren't able to do a quantitative analysis because it would be uncertain what construction activities, if any, would occur concurrently between the battery energy storage and AEC because there wasn't that level of information available at the time. So it's there. It's somewhat qualitative. We weren't really able to quantitatively do any type of assessment with that.
This one, it's in the rebuttal testimony, so I think I'd have to put this out to the panel again. This is rebuttal, Exhibit 2004, page 7. Staff state, given the industrial setting and temporary nature of any demolition of AGS and lack of corresponding impact from AEC, staff disagrees with the Wetlands Trust that detailed information on the time and methodology of demolition is necessary to assess cumulative impacts. Can staff please clarify what they mean by temporary?
We have the citation.
Yeah, could you,
you have the citation again?
That's in the rebuttal testimony at page 7, staff's rebuttal.
And which portion were you reading from? I have it.
I'm opening it right now. Page 7 is... having to do with bio?
Yeah, this is Scott White again. I found the sentence.
Like I said, I'm not sure who, this seemed to be kind of a general section, so I don't know who prepared that.
In biology, I'm sorry, could you read the first few words of the quote again?
Given the industrial setting and temporary nature of any demolition at AGS.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's the last sentence in the second to last paragraph of the biology section of staff's rebuttal, I guess.
Correct.
Right. Let me just, so that everybody's on the same page. It says, given the industrial setting and temporary nature of any demolition of AGS and lack of corresponding impacts from AEC, staff disagrees with Wetlands Trust that detailed information on the time and methodology of demolition is necessary to assess cumulative impacts.
So this is in the context, as far as I understand it, this is in the context of dust and debris and the potential for cumulative effects of the operation of AEC along with demolition of the AGS, and making an assumption, which I'm not sure if it's warranted or not, making an assumption that demolition of the AGS would, by that implosion method shown in the video that the trust introduced into the record. So I guess what staff is saying, what we are saying here, is when exactly that might happen, the demolition, wouldn't make a difference in terms of trying to evaluate whether operation of the AEC has a considerable contribution to any significant cumulative impacts regarding dust, and you know, whether that happened. You know, 4 years from now or 5 years from now, it would happen in a moment, and the overall impact of the dust, well, it would be what it is, but the AEC's contribution to that effect, to that cumulative effect, would be less than considerable. And
so my question was on what you meant by temporary, since you referred to the temporary nature of the demolition of AGS, and I'll be a little more specific. The trust has submitted evidence from Coastal Commission showing demolition of the South Bay Power Plant would take 12 months, 5 days a week, 12 hours a day. Do you consider this to be temporary?
Yeah. Yes would be more formal, wouldn't it?
I mean, if I'm reading this correctly, basically, do you mean then that once the demolition is done, it's done? You're not going to keep going with the demolition over and over and over and over again. Once you've demolished the units, they're demolished and they're gone, and then that's the end of demolition. So I think that's probably what they mean by temporary, but don't let me put words in anybody's mouth.
We don't see the demolition process as a long-term permanent process.
So you did not consider demolition that would, you know, take about a year with continuous truck travel and all of those to be, that did not meet your definition of the demolition. You were simply talking about the moment of the explosion?
I'm going to object because that's really about the demolition.
It's asked and answered, so sustain the objection.
Can you clarify how that was answered? I'm legitimately confused because it seems what they're saying is the demolition, they're talking about one point in time versus the entire project of demolition.
I
well,
think
and I've had a further objection that there's no evidence in the record about potential.
Okay, yeah. EGS, they're an existing brand new power plant,
and which calls up a. So I'm going to sustain the objection on. Okay, so there are no facts in evidence with regard to how the demolition is to be achieved.
The problem.
Well, that's right, but the problem is, and we've tried to make clear through an order, is that the demolition is going to happen whenever it's going to happen. The demolition is not a reasonably foreseeable consequence of the AEC's construction. That is something completely independent. And so that's why the ruling came down and said, there, because it's not a part of the project, there is no need for direct and indirect impacts analysis. However, the committee did order the staff to analyze the cumulative impacts because it'll probably happen sometime. We just don't know when. And I think that that based on the testimony that you've cited here in the rebuttal testimony, there's a reasonable inference that by temporary, that means this isn't going to be going ongoing for the life of the AEC, demolition after demolition after demolition. They demolish units 1 through 6, and they're demolished. And yes, there are the disparate impacts, traffic.
I do think, though, and what I'm really getting at here is what was staff using as their definition of demolition?
Okay,
that's the answer that I'm looking for, and I don't feel like.
All right, that's a different question, but that's a reasonable question. Let's ask that. So,
sure.
Yes.
Scott White again. We don't have a definition of how those units would be demolished. The only, you know, I suppose it makes an impression having watched that video for a couple of minutes, the implosion. But honestly, I don't know if they're going to take it apart piece by piece, or I don't know how that would work. We did assume that that the process of demolition of that of those units would be temporary, not permanent. And for the purpose of evaluating cumulative impacts of the AEC operation with the dust and debris impacts of demolition of the AGS, our conclusion was that the AEC operation wouldn't produce dust and debris, and so it wouldn't have a contribution to any such cumulative effect. So we don't have a significant cumulative effect, or at least not a considerable contribution to any cumulative effect. That's the conclusion we're reaching for biology.
No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, staff. I'm going to allow you to ask any follow-up questions you feel are necessary.
At this point, I think staff's had clarified through additional testimony, so I have nothing further to add.
Thank you. Applicant?
The question that I was going to ask before. So I'm referring back to the question on Apple Lores and the question about the South Coast PDOC and your analysis. And so my question for you first, Mr. White, are you aware of any applicable laws that would require you to consider the South Coast Air Quality Management PDOC in your analysis?
No, I'm not. And I wanted to add too that the nitrogen deposition issue, as it pertains to biology, is addressed in an appendix to the biology section authored by the air quality staff, and that's complete at this time as supporting evidence for the biology conclusions.
Okay, thank you. I'll go to Ms. Worrell now. Same question. Are you aware of any applicable laws that would require you to consider the South Coast Air Quality Management District, PDOC, in your analysis?
No, I am not.
Mr. Abouladon, are you aware of any laws that would require you to consider the South Coast Air Quality Management District, PDOC, in your analysis?
No, I'm not.
And Mr. Hughes, are you aware of any applicable laws that would require you to consider the South Coast PDOC in your analysis?
This is Joseph Hughes. No, I'm not.
I have no more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. I think that unless you had anything further, Ms. Summers, this would be a great opportunity to segue into the questions the committee had with regard to LORS, but let's finish up on the cumulative analysis questions. Ms. Summers.
I do not have any further questions.
Thank you. Well, then that takes care of the whole area of cumulative analysis. And finally, then, now staff, according to my notes, you earlier testified that there were, now 2012, exhibit 2012 only related to conditions of certification, not LORS. Do I have that right?
Yeah, exhibit 2012 was the updates to Worker Safety 8, Cold 6, based on comments we had received. So that the updates from what had been published in FSA, and I believe that Cold 6, as we had updated it, is acceptable by the applicant, and that condition can be taken off of the list of conditions that we have issues with the applicant, but they should confirm that.
Yes, I'd like to confirm that. I'd like to also acknowledge the tribe's presence here. I think they were very, their comments were very helpful in us reaching a final agreement on this issue, and I think we're all on the same page. So thank you very much to the staff for the hard work and the tribe for the contributions.
Thank you. We're at the final part of today's evidence taking, and this was at the urging of the committee, not any party. And basically, the situation was that we had requested staff to give us more detail on certain analysis of what we call LORS. LORS is an acronym. L-O-R-S is laws, ordinances, regulations, and standards. And, you know, very deep and narrow subject area discipline. All of them, whether it be worker safety or these levels, they all have their standards, their different laws, they all have their different regulations. And we had asked staff to do a give us a few, as they were explained and described in staff's final staff assessment. So this morning, which is, what are we going to title this thing? I have LORS table. Is that what it's called? 2013,
that would be the exhibit number for it.
Okay. So, at this time...
Is there a copy available of that?
Yeah.
It was docketed.
Are you online right now?
Yeah.
Are you on?
Yeah, if someone has the...
Uh-oh, the Wi-Fi password. I'll tell you what, because I don't think... Can we get that up? Right, the exhibit list that I put out... So Mr. Kramer is helping out Ms. Summer by giving her the Wi-Fi password. What we do, ladies and gentlemen, is we require people who are going to put in evidence in our proceedings to put them in essentially publicly by docketing them. We call it e-filing. You go to the Energy Commission's website, energy.ca.gov, and there's a place where you click on e-filing, and that's how you would upload the documents. And that is how staff uploaded this particular document on what we call the dockets page. So this is available for everyone to look at. The problem I have is that when I printed off the exhibit list, this exhibit hadn't been docketed yet. So my exhibit list that I gave to the public advisor only goes up to exhibit number 2011. So exhibit 2012, as you heard, were further testimony with regard to worker safety and fire protection and cultural resources conditions, and then we have this new LORS table. So I guess the way I'd like to go about this is I really don't know that I need to get any live testimony about this.
My understanding was our effort was to get it into the docket beforehand and do it as a written document, so we wouldn't need any live testimony. So there wasn't really a plan to move forward with that. We tried to match, and a lot of the information changes aren't really new per se. It's just that we're moving stuff and putting it into the table form some of the info in the text, so that it's easier to see how the LORs is met. And then for the LORs that actually don't apply to this project, because they are more like they would be applicable to the county or some other jurisdiction, those LORs have been removed and shown through strikeout, so that when the PMPD is put together, it can just note that those aren't included because they're not necessary because they don't apply to the project. So those are the two primary changes was ensuring that the LOR actually applied to the project, and then also clarifying how the LOR was met.
Okay, so right now on the projection screen, we are looking at Exhibit 2012, right?
Correct.
Okay, so what we would like to be looking at is 20...
No, this is the correct one.
This is 2013?
Yeah, this is the LORs table. Some of the topics have a little introductory paragraph to kind of explain, and there's an introductory paragraph at the beginning to allow for the public to understand what this is about and what the strikeouts and underlines mean.
So just so everybody understands what we're doing and why, all of these tables were already in staff's final staff assessment and in the preliminary staff assessment, but the committee wanted some further clarification on a lot of these, because as we read these LORs, we were wondering, well, why are we including LORs that put no affirmative obligation on the project itself? In other words, some of these say the state shall promulgate laws to carry out the intent of, let's say, the Clean Water Act or Clean Air Act or something like that. But there was that was an obligation put upon the state, not necessarily the project, and we didn't feel it was necessary to clutter the LORs analysis with those LORs that really didn't apply to the applicant directly, over which they didn't have any obligation to take actual action. And so that is what we required. That's why we required, and this is for your benefit too, Ms. Summer, why we ask staff to give us this further analysis in these tables. So did you have any question on that, Ms. Summer, before I move on?
One thing I'm not seeing in here is any public utilities code sections. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing those. Just the entire document. I was just doing a search since this was just posted, I think, today.
Public utility code?
For which topic?
The loading order.
I didn't hear what you said just now.
The loading order, preferred resources. For example, 4.5.
Those would be LORs.
Right, and that wouldn't be a loading order is exactly what I was just describing to the public, which is that is something that the CAISO has obligations to deal with, but not the Alamitos Energy Center wouldn't have a direct obligation under that scheme.
And I think maybe the issue is the key term is applicable LORs. And I think what you have from both the applicant and the staff are our assessment of what LORs are applicable. If the interveners believe the LORs is applicable, they have to make a case for that.
Thank you, Mr. Harris, who, as usual, did a good job of making it pretty clear. So I'm just asking if the intervener has any questions on these LORs.
I guess you're talking about LORs that are applicable to the applicant, but what about LORs that are applicable to the commission?
The LORs that are applicable to the commission are not applicable to the project. We're really interested in what LORs, because we are also the compliance people. We don't just certify a power plant and walk away. We also have a complete compliance section, and so it is really important that we know what are the obligations that the applicant has to do ongoingly. And so that's
that's why anything that would apply to the Energy Commission, well, that's not the applicant. That wouldn't be the Alamitos Energy Center.
Similarly, like, we wouldn't have CEQA. CEQA applies to the agency. And so the LORs are just what would apply to the applicant, and then what conditions, if relevant, would be listed then as in the conditions for certification would need to be done to meet that LOR. So it's always the purpose of that table is, again, right, what the applicant must do.
Thank you, Mr. Babula, who also did a good job of making it clearer than I could. So, and one more thing, Ms. Summer, just so you know, there is going to be an opportunity for briefing. So, you know, that's really, for all intents and purposes, your briefs or your closing argument.
I mean, I don't have any further questions on this at this time.
Applicant, with regard to LORs?
No questions. I just want to make sure we move this into evidence.
Okay, they've already been moved into evidence. I believe that all of the evidence has been received into evidence that was offered today. Okay?
Yeah, I just 2012 and 2013 are in as well. I guess that was covered by my obnoxious blanket statement at the beginning, so thank you.
Yeah, well, I moved those specifically in and noted that those were going to be added.
Just to be clear, 2012 and 2013 have been received into evidence. Have all of the evidence that the proponents requested that we receive is all in now. So, which is perfect because it's 3 o'clock and it's time for a public comment. You're not a member of the public. Matt Layton, go ahead.
I do want to point out, Jared has been so polite as to not point it out, that none of the engineering office sections are in 2013 exhibit. I did not have my staff do the table updates as you requested. I had different priorities. We were planning to publish with Part B. We'll look at what the environmental office has done, try to figure out if we think that's a workable system. I'm still evaluating what this might do to our sections because I just don't want to clutter up the sections.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a question for the committee, and we'll see what the committee wants to do. On that.
Feedback on what you have received in 2013 would be helpful in Exhibit 2013. If you could provide some feedback and think that actually meets your needs and why not.
I'll tell you one of the concerns I had, and I thought you were at the pre-hearing conference. You may remember.
Absolutely, I was, yes.
There was one table, I think it might have been facility design, if I'm not mistaken, that said, you know, column one is applicable LORs, column two is description.
I remember the discussion.
Okay. Where all it said under, LORs was federal, just the word federal, and nothing further.
Again, we will work to provide this in Part B.
Right. So, okay, well.
I do have another question.
The only concern I have is that if I'm closing the record on all of the subject areas today, with the exception of air quality and public health, then that would require a reopening, and that would probably require a motion by staff, and that would require an opportunity for all of the other parties to be able to inquire and ask questions. Now, I think it would be limited to LORs in this case, because that's what we're talking about, but...
I'll leave it to the committee to decide how to do that.
Okay.
And this, so I would note that the LORs issues are questions, legal questions, not factual questions. So we didn't take any testimony on them for that reason today.
Well, they are legal questions, and it's something that I think that the legal office of the Energy Commission needs to participate in with more enthusiasm, I guess, in the future when it comes to these tables.
It's always helpful to rework the process, perhaps outside of a proceeding. Having input on Wednesday for a Monday product is prone to run into errors.
Yeah, but the problem with that is we had a status conference a good month and a half before then, and the one before that where we made it really clear that the LORs were a little lacking. So
apparently it wasn't as clear as you thought, Mr. Chairman.
Must not have been. So, in any event, thank you for your comments. And,
could I ask you another question?
Go ahead.
On the FDOC,
yes.
It comes out this Friday. Do you still plan to require that we publish in 2 weeks over the Thanksgiving holiday?
No, here's a good question, and thanks for raising that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, what we're waiting on from the South Coast Air Quality Management District, who will, if they're not here, will address us on the telephone, is a final determination of compliance, and that's a requirement for us to proceed on to the air quality section. What's going to happen is when they file the FDOC, the FDOC final determination of compliance, the committee will issue another schedule, just as we did in the pre-hearing in the notice of pre-hearing conference. We'll have a new notice because we have to notice the second or the phase two evidentiary hearing. So what we'll have, if the committee wants, we'll see what the committee wants to do. But if they want another pre-hearing conference, we may or may not have one. We may just go directly to the evidentiary hearing, since everybody now kind of understands how we do things. I don't know that a pre-hearing conference is necessary. But what we will do then is notice the evidentiary hearing, and in that notice there will be other orders, including a schedule that says, you know, opening briefs are due on this date, rebuttal briefs on that date, and, you know, witnesses, lists, you know, the things that we usually have contained within our notice of pre-hearing conference, the witness, the identified witnesses, how much time they need, that sort of thing. That would all be in that notice. Okay, so you're waiting on a notice from us. As soon as we get an FDOC published, then that will trigger the committee to issue a notice of the part two evidentiary hearing. Okay?
I just want to add on the engineering lawyers, we could leave the record open and just receive that, because really, I believe my understanding with the engineering lawyers is it's going to be really just a repackaging of what's already in the record in the FSA. So it's not like there's going to be new stuff. It'd be a matter of cleaning up some of the lures that don't apply, and then potentially, if this format is acceptable, then maybe adding the column, tying it into the specific conditions. But it's not going to have like new information, so it's more considering a sort of a repackaging of what the existing FSA has, but in a more visually clearer table that would then be consistent with what the environmental sections have done. So I don't necessarily know we need to make it super cumbersome on how to handle this, where we can still achieve closure of the record with just accepting within the next week or so. These things would be docketed, and then anybody can, if the parties need to comment or have a concern, but in reality, it's not going to be new stuff.
So just to answer your question, yes, that format is just great. So yeah, use that. Okay, are we ready for public comment then? Parties? Okay. Okay. So here's what's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen, and this is for everybody's benefit, those of you who are on the phone and people who are in the room. We have a number of people. I'd say my guess is there's probably about 40 or 50 people in the room. And many of them have filled out a blue card, and they want to make a comment. This is what I'm holding up, is the blue card. And if you want to make a comment, haven't filled one of these out, I need you to go to the back table in the back of the room and fill out a blue card and give it to Jocelyn, who is our acting public advisor today. What we do is we will call your name. When your name is called, please come up to this podium here. This is for the people in the room. And speak directly into the mic. And we will give you, let's see if you can get your comment out in about 3 minutes, I think. If you've ever tried to talk for 3 minutes, that's a long time. So, anyway, if there are people who are too shy for minutes, you give them comments, and they want to speak, make a comment, and aware of you can there's a place where you can actually put in your mark, and you don't have to speak, and you might even mark on this thing you don't want to speak publicly. So the option is yours. So first I'm going to call Michael O'Toole. Just speak directly to Mike. Go ahead.
Michael O'Toole. presented the maple samples in the middle of the house. Doesn't talk about this to regulate the water flowing through there than there used to be. And ever since we've been doing that, of the dredging or whatever it took to make the bay bigger, that plant has been producing a pump that was used as a, I believe, a cooling agent for the facility. That pump actually acts as a tremendous filter within Alamitos Bay that actually pumps the water through it all day long. And that has a lot to do, we believe, with the water quality in Alamitos Bay. So our concern has been how to keep that pump possibly going, even with the movement of this. I know that there's a lot of sides to it of probably some pros and cons, but what I appreciate is the fact that AES has been very informative about it and very willing to work with the city and very willing to work with the community on this actual concern. It might not be the big power concern, but the waterway is certainly a very viable area for the community, and keeping it the way it is now would be a big bonus. So, again, it's more of a thanks for keeping an eye on that. I hope we stay together on moving forward on that project, and I feel very comfortable that we will because of the history that we have with AES and the communicative abilities that they've had for us. So thank you very much for having this and allowing for me. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. O'Toole. Sam Dunlap, are you still here? Sam Dunlap, please come forward. You're going to all hear me say over and over again, please speak directly into the microphone. Thank you for doing that.
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Dunlap. I'm a cultural resource director for the Governing Otonga Nation. I did submit emailed comments in on November 3rd. My concern as a tribal member and someone actively in the field of archaeology and cultural resource protection for our tribal group, I just wanted to emphasize, especially to the applicant, that cultural items, I hate to call them artifacts, but cultural items are very sacred to our tribe. I'm sure we are all aware of it. I have been in this field for nearly 25 years. And I did comment directly on condition 6, as did our tribal chairwoman, Sandine Goad. But in reading a supplemental testimony by Gabriel Rourke, which I believe came out last week on the 10th, he states here that staff recommends, against the applicant's proposal that Native American monitoring would only be required in non-fill material are encountered. My recommendation would be that in the years that I've been doing this and seen it happen, that fill material does contain, at times, sacred items to our tribe, whether it be in the form of crown stone, shell items such as shell beads. These isolated items still do happen to be in fill material, whether the fill material has actually come from off-site or whether it was original material that has simply been moved around within the project area. And unfortunately, I did not have a chance to submit this into the docket, but these are just examples, photos of items. This one being a pestle, these two being brownstone, what we call monos. They were found in fill material on a site within the last 2 years in Los Angeles County. Some of us believe that these items are not just uncovered inadvertently. Some of us believe that these items... I'm apologizing, I get emotional. But some of us believe that these items are meant to be found. And that they will come home to us. These items are home at this point, because they are with our tribe. And I see I'm out of time. However, I would like the committee just to consider that the need for additional monitoring within fill material is very important. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Dunlap. Thank you for sharing those photos. Sandiné Goad, are you here still? Thank you. Please come forward. Also with the Gabrielino Tongva Nation.
I'd like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sandiné Goad. I'm the Tribal Council Chairwoman of the Gabrielino Tongva Nation. I was duly elected through our constitution and our election process. My thoughts on this is that the sacredness of something so insignificant that somebody might pass over it as being in the fill, when you go in and you churn up the dirt and you take the blades through a set of remains, you're scattering those remains. And if they have any stringed beads, they go, and they're going to look like little tiny rocks. Most people are not going to see them. And as I put in my comments, a 2-millimeter bead is very, very small. That's what we use nowadays. Size 11 seed beads are 1.5 millimeters crossed. And that's the beads that are used in all these, not just Native American beadwork, but all kinds of beadwork. It's very hard to see. A lot of people would pass over a tooth, because a tooth is insignificant. At the University High, we repatriated and reburied 7 sets of remains. 1 set was a handful of teeth. That was it. It wasn't a full set of remains from skull to toes. It wasn't but a handful. I think it was just maybe 8 teeth. Another set was shards of bone. Another set, handful. I think altogether, out of the 7 sets that we reburied, there was only 1 complete set, and I'm not sure if the skull was actually there. The institution that I'm talking about was built in 1920. They had churned up that track and field several times, and this time when they did it, they went in and they found 7 sets of remains. The items that he showed you, we can't take pictures of the remains. It's just too sacred. We'll be able to show you those. Anyway, the whole thing is that you don't know what's there. You can guess. Because somebody in 1955 went in there without any laws governing them or anybody watching over the ground and churned the soil up. And now we would just like the opportunity to go in and make sure that any of our ancestors can be collected. No matter if it's 1 tooth or a full set of remains, if full set of remains most likely in this situation is not going to happen. Where you're going to find these little shards and these little sets of teeth are going to be in the fill dirt that was churned over probably several, I'd say dozens of times. You scrape up the dirt with the excavator, and you throw it in the truck, and the truck hauls it off, and the truck dumps it, and then you have to pick it up again and put it in, and it just keeps tumbling. So we would like the opportunity to look at the filter. I understand that there is an agreement between the applicant and the staff, and that excludes the filter. But we found over and over again items of significance to us and sacred to us in that churned up dirt. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. So, ladies and gentlemen, I see some new people have shown up. If you wish to make a public comment, we want you to go to the public advisors table in the back of the room, fill out one of these blue cards, and they will give it to me, and that's how we know you're here and want to make a comment. Is Keith Harkey here? Mr. Harkey, come forward, please, and speak into the microphone.
Yes, my name is Keith Harkey. I'm an iron worker, business agent for the Iron Workers Local 433. But today I'm speaking on behalf of 140,000 members of the Los Angeles and Orange County building and construction trades. We're 100% support of this AES power plant project. We believe it's environmentally sound. We don't build just to build. We build it because there's a need or a change or something that the reason we build. We don't just randomly build things that aren't needed. We already have an all-union an agreement on this project, so that's a good partnership that we have with AES. We're looking forward to working with them. That means good careers are going to come out of this. The local hire and the veterans, they have preference, so it's good for the local economy. It built back into the economy. We also have a partnership with the Long Beach City College for their apprenticeship preparedness program, so we can also bring those students in and start their careers right here locally. It's a valuable pipeline into the apprenticeship program as well. We have the most skilled and highly trained workforce that enables the efficiencies, and it will have the highest industry standards on this project. And once again, I'll keep it short. We are definitely in 100% support of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harkey. Keith Simmons, president of the Los Cerritos Wetlands Land Trust, unless there's another organization that's an LCWL.
That's it.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here with another member of the board of directors, and as the committee is aware, our executive director, Elizabeth Lamb, and the consultant assisting her review of this power plant application are currently out of the country. We're disappointed you chose to ignore their request for a short postponement to allow them to be here and testify. The board has been closely following this process to ensure the greatest possible protection and restoration of the Los Cerritos wetlands. And we are also keenly aware of the need to retrofit the region's electrical system to ensure grid reliability while transitioning to the future of renewable energy. As you probably know, the Alamitos power plant was built where coastal wetlands once existed. The dredging and filling of those wetlands for this and other projects was done before the science understood the enormous value of wetlands. And the noise of the generators and the air emissions following on the wetlands is a constant source of habitat degradation that impairs restoration. Finally, the cooling water system and the intake and mortality of marine life has likewise made restoration challenging for decades. In hindsight, it was clearly a costly mistake to build these power plants in coastal wetlands, and those decisions and others have left the state with about 5% of historical coastal wetland areas, making restoration a daunting challenge. We can't blame our parents' generation for mistakes they clearly didn't understand. But we know better now. What we can do is not repeat those mistakes. Even better yet, when the timing is right, as it is now, we can try to undo some of the unintentional errors of the past and try to provide a better future for our children and their children. As you know, we are advocating for this process to document and thoroughly review preferred alternatives to what AES is proposing, and we understand that the Commission staff feels bound by CEQA law to compare the adverse impacts for the proposed project to those created by the existing plant. In this circumstance, that is an unfortunate approach. But right or wrong, or however unfortunate it might be, that CEQA standard does not preclude looking at preferred alternatives.
The PUC has already reviewed the need for this project and approved a contract for 640 megawatts of gas-fired generation and 100 megawatts of battery storage at this site. And that PUC decision was not limited to their duty to ensure grid reliability while protecting ratepayers, while protecting ratepayers from utilities overcharging PUC. PUC decisions are now enforcing their loading order. That is, they are enforcing state regulations to minimize greenhouse gas emissions. We feel strongly that the proposal you are considering, a 1040 megawatt generating station, is inconsistent with what the PUC approved. Consequently, the proposal is inconsistent with state laws, ordinances, regulations, and standards, what you call for. I guess I'll cut it short there since I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simmons, for your comments. Tony Gentile, I hope I pronounced that right. I'm Italian, I would have gone.
Close enough, Gentile.
Okay.
Good. Tony Gentile, Peninsula Beach Preservation Group. I live on the bay. A little history. My family bought a house in 1959 that is just to the north of the power plant on Lee's Way. My mother lives there. My brother lives around the corner. So I've been familiar with that generating facility all my life. And I've lived within 2 or 3 miles of the facility pretty much my whole life. I see this as a huge improvement over the existing facility from several standpoints. From an aesthetic standpoint, as a gateway in the east into our city, I think it's going to be a huge improvement. I know that this is a more environmentally friendly power plant. It's going to create jobs. I think that the battery storage idea is really important in the grid, so I'm strongly in favor of it. I'd like to echo what Michael O'Toole was saying about the water quality. I know that our bay is one of the cleanest bays on the coast, and largely that is because of the pumps that pump water from our bay over to the San Gabriel River. That flow through our bay has meant that the sea life and the cleanliness of our bay is outstanding. And so the one caveat that I have is we want to make sure that those pumps keep pumping water through. I know that that's supposed to go away, but I believe that AES has been working with the city as a way to facilitate that water flow. So just in some summary, I'd like to say that we strongly support the new facility.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gentile. I have Lenny from Los Cerritos Wetlands.
Hello, board. Lenny Arkenstall, CEO and founder of the Los Cerritos Wetlands Stewards. And I've been caring and maintaining the Los Cerritos Wetlands for 25 years now. We strongly support this project as it'll reduce noise, air, and light pollution. My hope also is that you will respect the request of the Tongva Nation. It's a point I didn't consider. However, this is a great opportunity for the city. We also welcome the AESC family. They are great people to work with, and they care about our community. So we strongly support this much-needed project. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, sir. Andrew Mayorga. Leuna.
Hello. Okay. My name is Andrew Mayorga. I'm a business agent with Leuna Local 1309. Leuna stands for Laborers International Union North America. We represent 2,400 members that live within the city and surrounding cities of Southern LA County and Orange County. The uniqueness of this project, of course, we're 100% in favor, like my brother Keith came up here and stated, it's obviously going to create jobs, but opportunity, and opportunity can be used so many different ways. One of the opportunities is us as the trades are becoming more grassroots, helping out the impacted areas of our community, those that are looking for help for the future. We're getting them, training them, pre-apprenticeship, and having them move into apprenticeship program. Having them work on projects like this, people that live in our community, work in our community, seems to have a better benefit for our community
and that's why we're in support of this project. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Again, if anyone just came in and you want to make a public comment, we need you to fill out one of these blue cards, and you do so by going to the back table and talking to the public advisor, and she'll give you the card to fill out and bring it up here. W.I. Thomas. Mr. Thomas.
Yes, good afternoon, Board. My name is Bill Thomas. I'm a resident of Alameda Heights. I'm speaking on behalf of myself. I've also had the experience of being with the city's advisory committee in the Southeast Area Special Plan that has worked diligently over a number of years trying to find a good balance towards planning for the benefits of the people as well as preservation of the wetlands area. And I think we've getting close to the end of that process. It looks like we have a very good balanced solution. Also, as a retired businessman, I understand the power situations. Used to have a plant over in the Torrance area, and AES has an excellent reputation both in that area as well as in this area for being responsive to the city's needs and being quite cooperative. And the whole concept of the battery storage is a look towards the future, and that's what we need. We need developments that look towards the future rather than just look at the past. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Neil, forgive me if I mispronounce names, Lauzon, Lauzon, I-B-E-U-E-W.
You're very close with you. Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Neil Lauzon. I represent the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I'm the president of Local 441. I'm here to speak in favor of the Alamitos Energy Center. As some other brothers have come up and spoken already, this is a project that obviously supports a lot of local jobs. We have in place already is a project labor agreement that guarantees local hire, veterans preference. These are some of the parts that give back directly to the communities that surround projects of this size. What this also does is a project that is cutting emissions nearly in half. You're looking at improving a project, improving an existing plant right now. Currently, that's going to cut down on the use of the ocean water, like I said, as well as cutting emissions. It creates nearly 4.7 million man hours of construction style of work. That's a lot of time and a lot of jobs for people in this area to be able to work where they live, spend that money where they live, and not have to travel many miles, hundreds of miles sometimes, to do work in their trade, whether it be as an electrician, an iron worker, a laborer, plumber. These are all jobs that support the middle class, support the people that live in these communities, and we just want to make sure that everyone here is aware that not only the building trades of LA and Orange County, but the laborers, iron workers, electricians, we all support this project very much, and we hope that you will too. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comments. I only have one card left. Now, if you're here and you want to make a comment, please fill out a blue card in the back with the public advisor. If we have everybody, then what we'll do is we'll go to the phones because there are people on the telephone who'd like to make a comment. So lastly, but not leastly, we have Laura Laramendi.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Commissioners and Hearing Officer Chelly, for the opportunity to provide comment today on the application for certification to modernize the existing Alameda's generating station, Alameda's Energy Center, AEC. My name is Laura Laramendi, and I'm Advocacy Director for the Los Angeles County Business Federation, also known as BizFed. We're a grassroots alliance of more than 160 top business groups representing 325,000 employers with 3 million employees throughout LA County. Our members include large and small employers, minority business owners, and job creators from a wide range of industries. The Alameda Energy Center is a highly efficient, natural gas-fired, combined cycle air-cooled, not using ocean water, power plant with a capacity to power 1.5 million homes and businesses. That's a lot. The benefits and improvement of the Alameda Energy Center are many. helps California meet its aggressive green energy goals by integrating more renewable power and using the highest efficiency technology. It has been mentioned it will use 50% less fuel to deliver the same electrical service. Air-cooled condensers allow the plant to eliminate the use of ocean water and significantly release the use of fresh water by 70%. Economic benefits, local, $1.3 billion in private investment in California, the electric infrastructure, which is in need. Over $130 million in local purchases. Gentleman mentioned 4.7 million hours in construction-related work and payroll, and it'll also contribute over $8 million to the local economy, generating tax revenues for local services such as public safety, public works, etc. This Alameda's Energy Center will comply with all applicable laws, ordinances, regulations, and standards, LORS, with the implementation of its recommended mitigating measures. California Energy Commission staff has also concluded that AEC will comply with the above. On behalf of all the grassroots members of this Fed, we urge the California Energy Commission to make the final decision to approve this project. Thank you for your time and consideration to this matter.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Laramendi. So if there's no further comments, I'm looking back at the public advisor, nothing further. Okay, then let's go to the telephone. Now, the way I'd like to proceed on the phone is I'd like to hear from the agencies first before we take comment from general members of the public. Is anyone on the phone from South Coast Air Quality Management District? South Coast Air Quality Management District, Bhaskar Chandan. I had no idea the South Coast Air Quality Management District was that much fun. Okay. Well, is there anyone on the phone on behalf of South Coast Air Quality Management District? Okay, hearing none. Then are there any people on the phone who'd like to comment who are associated with local associations, state agencies, cities, counties, water boards? Okay, hearing none. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak up and make a comment at this time? Please speak up. Anyone? I actually don't have a list on my computer, so I'm looking at the monitor there. Anyone who's on the phone who would like to make a public comment at this time, now is the time to speak up and make it. So please speak up, anyone, if you'd like to make a comment. Going once, going twice, no further comments? Okay. Yes.
I just want to make sure that you asked about Mr. Simpson's availability again, since he seemed to be interested in the process, and I thought it was good that you return to that issue, if you would.
Yes. We had asked whether Mr. Simpson was available earlier this morning. Mr. Simpson, Rob Simpson, are you on the phone at this time? Rob Simpson? Is everyone unmuted? Everybody is unmuted, so anyone who would like to make a comment, please speak up now. Okay. Mostly I can just say I recognize a lot of the names are members of Energy Commission staff that are listening in that wouldn't want to make a comment. So, okay, with that, then, what we will do at this time is declare the evidentiary record closed on all subject areas except air quality, greenhouse gases, and public health. The committee will allow the parties to reopen subject areas in Part 1 that we've just closed only upon a demonstration that the subject area is materially affected by the evidence received on air quality or public health. Now we're going to talk about opening briefs. Again, at the pre-hearing conference. Yes, Mr. Babula.
Do you have a thought on the engineering lures? I mean, do you want me to... I was thinking if we could keep the record open for that, I could have something filed in a week or so that would repackage the lures as we discussed, or would you rather have that with a short little motion to reopen record just to accept that?
That's a good question. Just, we're staying on the record, but I'm just going to have a quick little conference with the committee. Okay, so, Mr. Babula, to answer your question, it isn't necessary to reopen for the engineering. I think that the committee can work with what we have. Now, that said, if I am talking out of turn or if I've made some oversight and I need further information on any particular rules or anything like that, what I would say is that I would put that in our notice.
Okay, so you're saying that the you don't need anything additional on the lures front from engineering?
That's
at this point, unless
this
I see something in your notes.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So now, then, if there's nothing further, I want to just talk about opening briefs again. You know that an opening brief, in my point of view, is like your closing argument. That's your best opportunity to explain to us what your position is, what facts support your position, what law, in addition to your facts, support your position, but you do not have to. They're optional. So if the parties don't want to do an opening brief, that is your call to make. But if you do want to make one, we're going to, and I will put this in our next schedule so you will be able to see this, but basically, generally, the opening briefs will be 2 weeks after the transcripts are published and docketed. The transcripts we've asked for to be expedited in this case, so we'll see when those should be coming out shortly. Opening briefs would be due within 2 weeks of that date, and then rebuttal briefs would be due 1 week after the opening briefs. So I really encourage the parties to provide opening and rebuttal briefs, but you don't have to. So with that, do you want to address?
All right. With that, I'd like to thank all of the parties, and we'll look forward to the FDOC and moving forward with the schedule and with the proceedings. So with that, we're adjourned. Yeah.